Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4, Text 71, Ambarish Maharaj offended by Durvasa Muni. Brahmangstad Gachapatram Te
Brahmangstad Gachapatram Te
Napagatanayam Ripa
Napagatanayam Ripa
Shama Payamaha Bhagam
Shama Payamaha
Tata Shantir Bhavishyati.
Tata Shantir Bhavishyati.
Chant.
Brahmangstad
Gachapatram Te Apagatanayam Ritam
Shamapaya Mahapajam
Shamapaya Mahapagam Tata Shantir Bhavishyati.
Brahmangstad Gachapatram Te
Brahmangstad Gachapatram Te
Napagatanayam Nripam
Napagatanayam Nripam
Shamapaya Mahabhagam
Shamapaya Mahabhagam
Tata Shantir Bhavishyati.
Tata Shantir Bhavishyati.
Brahmangstad Gacham Bhadram Te
Brahmangstad Gachapatram Te
Napagatanayam Nripam
Napagatanayam Nripam
Shamapaya Mahabhagam
Shamapaya Mahabhagam
Tata Shantir Bhavishyati
Tata Shantir Bhavishyati.
Ladies. Brahmangstad Gachapatram Te
Pramansa gacha padram te
Nabhaka
tanayam ripam
Shamapaya mahabhagam
Shamapaya mahabhagam
Tata shanti
bhavishyati
Brahman
O Brahmana
Tath
therefore
gacha
you go Padram,
all
auspiciousness.
Te,
unto you.
Nabhagatanayam.
To the son of Maharaja Nabhaga. Ripam,
the king Ambarish.
Shamapaya,
just try to pacify him.
Mahabhagam,
Mahabhagam,
great personality, pure devotee.
Pure devotee.
Tata,
thereafter.
Shanti,
peace.
Avishti,
there will be.
Translation. Vaishnava Prabhupada. Oh, best of the Brahmanas, you should therefore go immediately to King Ambarish, the son of Maharaj Nabhaga. I wish you all good fortune. If you can set aside Maharaj Ambarish, then there will be peace for you. Purport. In this regard, Madhva Muni quotes from the Garuda Purana, Brahmari Bhakti Kotyam Shad Angsho Naivam Parikshake Naivanyasya Chakrasya Pita Tapi Haririshvara Tatkaliko Pachayat Vat Tisham Yashasa Adirat Brahmadeyas Chatat Kirtim Vyanjayam Asurutamam Mohanaya Chitaityanam Brahmadenin Tanaya Cha Anyartam Chasayam Vishnur Brahmadeyas Chanirashisha Manisheshutamat Vatcha Tisham Bhaktiadi Birgunai Brahmadevish Vadhinatvam Gyapanaya Chikevalam Dravasascha Sayam Rujastatap Yan Yayam Uch Davan Tasyap Yanukrahartaya Darpanashartamevacha. The lesson to be derived from this narration concerning Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa Muni is that all the demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are under the control of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, when a Vaishnava is offended, the offender is punished by Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. No one can protect such a person, even Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva. Mukam karati vachalam pangam lankai tegirim yakipantamam bande shigurum tinatavinam Om agyana timirandasya gyananjara shalakaya chakshuminitam yena tasama shigurave namah. So, this is the conclusion. What is the lesson? Do you remember the lesson? Prabhupada said there's a lesson to be learned from this. So let's see how many of you are listening. What is the lesson from this lila?
All devas are under control of Vishnu.
Mm-hmm. Therefore,
if a Vaishnava is offended, only Vishnu can.
Yes, no one can protect anybody. If you offend a Vaishnava, no one can protect you. Even Brahma, who is the chief demigod, and Lord Shiva, their chief demigods, they cannot protect you. So it's very interesting how that the Vaishnava is completely under the control of the Lord. Not only is the Vaishnava Paradi under the control of Vishnu, but the Vaishnava. So therefore that means the Vaishnava, he's not under the laws of nature. When you become a Vaishnava, you're not under the laws of Brahma, Shiva, Durga anymore. You're directly connected with Vishnu, and he's the one who sees what happens to you. So if somebody serves a Vaishnava, then that's very nice. Then that punya is bhakti punya. It's not karma punya or jnana punya. It's bhakti punya. It's not under the laws of nature. And if someone offends a Vaishnava, that's aparad. That's also bhakti aparad, Vaishnava aparad. It's not under the laws of nature. It's directly connected with Vishnu. So Vishnu is giving his blessings to Durvasa. The Sudarshan Chakra is still hovering nearby. It was not doing anything as long as Vishnu was talking, but now again, the Sudarshan is going to start chasing him as soon as he leaves Vaikuntha. And he said, you just go to Vaishnava Maharaj Ambarish, and then you'll be peaceful, then you'll be saved. He's giving his benediction, yes. Go take shelter, lotus feet of the Vaishnava. As we heard in a previous class that I was giving, perhaps it was this time, that there are four reasons why devotees leave Krishna consciousness. And according to His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, the first one is Vaishnava Parad. You commit offense to another devotee. The reaction is that you will lose your taste for chanting, you will lose your taste for devotional service, and you will get a taste for material life. So that's one of the things, the most important reason that we should not offend Vaishnavas. We'll lose our taste for spiritual life, and we will fall down and we will go away. And the second one is the Vaishnava Parad, and a lack of quality association. If you do not have, if you think you're the best devotee, then who will you associate with? So pride is also there. Pride is another cause for fall down. And good association, if you don't have it, then you can leave. Pride is also, you think you're the best devotee, and nobody, and you won't listen to anyone if they try to tell you, no, this is not right what you're doing. And the fourth thing is lack of knowledge about the path of spiritual life. We should know that when anartha nirvritti comes, it will come for us also. Just like death will come, old age will come, anartha nirvritti will come for devotees. And that means doubts will come up, and obstructions will come up, and we may have mixed devotional service, we may have motives for doing what we do. And if we're not careful, then we can leave at this point during anartha nirvritti. The clearing stage. So we have to be very careful. This fault-finding mentality, this is a weed. Sadhu Ninda, especially. Sadhu Ninda is the first offense to the holy name. And also, it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lava Puja Pratishtari. I can't remember the verse. Yeah, that's the second part. Nishida Charkutinati. Jiva Hingsong, Lord Chaitanya, says that there are weeds that can grow in our heart. And one of those weeds is kutinati, politics, diplomacy or fault-finding mentality. So at the other six, there are six of them, Kutinati, Nishitachar, I can't remember what that means. Oh, that is improper behavior. Achar, but not good achar. Achar is behavior, and nishidachar is improper behavior. Nishidachar kutinati, that is fault-finding mentality. Jiva hingsa, violence to other living entities. Prabhupada said violence means that you don't preach. He said non-violence means you preach to others. Violence, if you don't preach, you're committing violence. Because we have such a wonderful gift, and if we don't share it with others, then that's actually, everyone's suffering, everyone's committing sins, and we're not interfering, we're not trying to help them. As I gave one example a few years ago, this is somebody in Ireland, father of a child, 7-year-old child. They went to the shopping mall, and the father was pointing out to all the people, just see all those people, they're suffering, they're in ignorance, they don't have knowledge. And so the child said, well, why don't we give it to them? And the father said, I'm trying, but actually, we don't feel for the suffering humanity. We have it, we have everything, but we should feel for those who don't have it. So this is very important. Kutinati jiva hingsang, lava puja pratishta adi. These are the weeds which can destroy our rebirth. Lava, puja, patishta, adi. So lava means you want something. You want something for your service. You want something. Lava, puja, you want to be worshipped. Or patishta, you want some position in devotional service. All of us, we have the same position. We're all servants. And isn't that wonderful? We're all equal in the eyes of the Lord. And that is our constitutional position. Jiva Sharupoi Krishna Nichadash. We are all servants of Krishna. So attitude is very important. In fact, after your instruction, in the beginning, Shirupa Goswami says that all our advancement depends on our attitude. So a fault-finding attitude is not good. It's a great obstruction. And not only Durvasa, he had this problem, but Daksha, reminds me of Daksha. If you know Daksha, he was performing a great sacrifice. He was very proud that he was one of the great Prajapatis born from the mind of Brahma, or from the thumb of Brahma, I believe he was born. He was born from the thumb. And everyone should honor him. Pratishta, Puja, Lava. So he had this critical attitude towards Lord Shiva, who was actually his superior. Although he saw him, he was seeing the external again, just like I was saying before, that Durvasa is seeing external. I'm a Brahmin, he's a king. I'm a mystic yogi, he's nobody. So he saw the externals, and so therefore he was criticizing Ambarish for drinking water before him. But actually, Prabhupada explained, and the Acharyas explained in their commentaries, that he did nothing wrong because the Lord was in his heart, and he is in the Lord's heart, and the Lord is dictating to him, drink that water. It's good. Don't worry about the rasa. So he did not commit any fault. He was faultless, Maharaj Ambarish. And you could see his attitude when he was tested, when Durvasa wanted to kill him. He said, okay, no problem. Lord wants to protect me, he can protect me. So this fault-finding, negative, critical attitude causes unhappiness. It breaks our tender bhakti-lata. My Krishna consciousness is susukam kartam avyayam, Krishna says, it's joyful. It's a joyful process. This is a symptom of goodness, that you're joyful. This is a symptom of nishta. In Bhagavatam, evam prasanna manasa bhakti-yoga yogitaha. So this is in first canto, second chapter, the levels from Shraddha to Prema are described. And it's described after you are free from Rajas and Tamas, you come to goodness. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki Tara Rajas Tamo Bhava, that passion and ignorance are finished, and you come to goodness. And what is the symptom of goodness? Evam prasanna manaso, you're happy. You're always happy. As Prabhupada said that, you know, if you're not happy, that means you're being attacked by Maya, if you're unhappy. So happiness is a symptom that you have come to goodness and you have come to the level of Nishtha. So what was the result of Vaishava Bharad for Daksha? He got the head of a goat. What will be the result from Urdhvasa? It won't be so severe, because he will take the necessary steps. Daksha didn't realize until he got the head of the goat, then he took shelter of Lord Shiva and begged forgiveness. But Durvasa is more intelligent, and he's going to take shelter, and he's instructed by the Lord, go take shelter of Ambarish, and you will be peaceful. So his daughter, Sati, she was telling Daksha, you know, man like you simply finds faults in others, but Lord Shiva, he doesn't find any fault in others. Not only that, if someone has a little good quality, he magnifies it greatly. Unfortunately, you have found fault with such a great soul. So Prabhupada in the Purport, he says, among the uncommonly good souls, there are still gradations. And the best good soul is one who accepts an insignificant asset of a person and magnifies that good quality. So that was Srila Prabhupada. We, who had no qualities, we were hippies, breaking all the four regulative principles, but he found the good quality in us. He found a good quality, and he magnified it. He found a spark, and he fanned that spark. One of my god sisters, she's in a black body, and she was, you know, people were not allowing her to become a devotee. The devotees were not allowing her. She was, because she was a bit independent. She was like preaching. As soon as she heard about Krishna consciousness, then her mother actually was the one, heard about Krishna consciousness, then she shaved up all her children, and you know, they immediately surrendered, and they said, you know, you can't do this. You're not initiated. You're not this. You're not that. So they kicked her out of the temple, and she went down. She said, okay, where will we go? We will go to Dallas. I think it was Dallas, yeah. And the temple president found out. He said, no, don't let them stay in the temple. And so, but then as soon as she got there, then she found out that Prabhupada was coming the next day. So they slept on the roof, she and the mother and the kids, waiting to see Prabhupada. And the mother met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada talked with his mother for 6 hours. And and after, at the end, the mother said, we want initiation. And he said, how many do you have? She said, 5. They all got initiation. It was on Radhastami, 1972. So she became my god sister and the mother also.
What's her name?
Krishnanandini. She's an amazing preacher.
Wow.
A very empowered preacher. So anyway, later on, she thanked the temple president for kicking her out of the temple, because if that hadn't happened, she wouldn't have gotten initiation from Srila Prabhupada on Radhastami so quickly. So, you know, the devotee, he's not offended. The devotee sees, oh, this is mercy. This is when Vidura was kicked out of the palace. He thought, wow, now I can't, no more politics. I can do my devotional service now. So when these difficulties happen, we should see the good thing in it. See that we should not think, oh, this is terrible. Of course, it may be terrible on the external. So again, we have to see the essence. We have to see the lesson. Prabhupada's telling us the lesson here. Don't offend devotees. Nobody can help you. Not even Brahma and Shiva. So just don't do it. You know, one time in L.A., of course, this is about our qualification. Prabhupada said, if it were not for the chanting of a Maha Mantra, you boys and girls could not do anything. In the West, you've used so many drugs, you cannot accomplish anything. Chanting Hare Krishna has enabled you to get all these temples and devotees. It's simply Krishna's mercy and the chanting. So we should take shelter of the holy name. That will help us. It will give us everything. Everything is in chanting the holy name. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there's nothing else in the 14 worlds except the holy name. So we should do that, but be careful of the offenses. There are 10 offenses plus 11 inattentiveness, so be very careful. And if we are careful, and the symptom of the clearing stage, Namavas, is that you are attentively chanting and you're trying to avoid the 10 offenses. So at least we should come to that level. And that will help us to attain pure chanting. So one time, Sridhama Maharaj was feeling a little bad because devotees were criticizing him. Prabhupada said, if you think you've become spiritually advanced and you start acting a role, you'll become mad. So another thing we should know is not to act beyond our level of advancement. So he says, they criticize me because I don't chant enough Sanskrit, I don't quote slokas. Prabhupada said, they sound like my godbrothers. Sudama, you speak from your heart. That's all that counts. Krishna doesn't care if you can't quote shlokas. You're a darn good preacher. You bring many people because of your heart. So this again brings to mind the example of the wives of the Brahmins who didn't know any shlokas. Their husbands knew all the shlokas. They knew all the rituals. They were completely first-class Brahmins. But the wives were better. Even though they didn't know any rituals, they didn't know shlokas, they didn't go to Gurukul, they didn't do all these things. But when Krishna came, the Brahmins rejected Krishna. That's the purpose of their whole sacrifice, is Krishna, you know, worship Krishna, please Krishna. And they didn't get it. They thought, no, the rituals are everything. You know, these foolish boys, cowherd boys, have come to us Brahmins and, you know, they're interrupting our sacrifice. And the cowherd boys knew. They said, no, at this point you can give food. They knew the rules. And they were telling the Brahmin, but the Brahmin just ignored them. And they just, and the wives, they didn't care. Their husbands were trying to stop them. They took all the food from the sacrifice and brought it to Krishna. And so that's, you know, this is the example that we see. The lesson there is also the same lesson, that these external things will not help us, the external. So, Prabhupada always saw the good in everyone. And if we meditate on the negative, then one day we'll find ourselves doing exactly what we criticize in others. Burijan Prabhu, my godbrother, gave an example that one time when he was eating prasadam, there was somebody across from him. And he was having a strange posture. He was like this and was eating, and he was saying, ah, he was thinking, oh, this is terrible. How he's sitting like this? This is really bad. So after about 2 weeks, Burijan started sitting like that. You meditate on the negative, you start doing it yourself. There's so many stories. Two brahmacharis who carried a woman. Two brahmacharis came to a river. There was a woman there. She needed help. One brahmachari carried her across. And then after a couple of miles, the other brahmachari said, how come you did that? You shouldn't have carried that woman across. And the one who carried the woman said, you know, I only carried her for 2 minutes. You're carrying her now for 1 hour. And so when you think about the negative, then you're doing that sin, actually. Thoughts are things. Thoughts are not just thoughts. Of course, in Kali Yuga, we get some mercy. Our thoughts don't bind us. In previous ages, if you thought like that, you would get the exact punishment for thinking of sinful activities. And we're lucky we're in Kali Yuga. Burijan Prabhu also, when I came to Vrindavan, I saw on his altar 3 monkeys. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. He said, so if you want to stay in Vrindavan peacefully, you should follow this example. And then we were walking, and he saw a monkey sleeping on the roof. He said, Anne, think no evil. So, because my experience in Vrindavan is if you criticize even mentally, you get the reaction immediately, which is good. I mean, it's good if you get the reaction. Don't have to wait. I just remember one time I was passing the temple. There was a kirtan. I was thinking, oh my, because I'm a musician, right? Oh, wow, this person surely does not have to know how to sing anything. He's just completely out of it. And I immediately tripped and fell. You know, I thought, all right, don't criticize. You know, so those musicians are very difficult, kirtan, sometimes. We have to really, first, you say, okay, tolerate. No, we have to go beyond tolerating. You have to appreciate them. At least they're chanting the holy name. But this is, you have to be careful. So, Adi Purush Prabhu, he was questioned one time after he gave a lecture. He's my student now, anyway. But he's a great preacher himself. And so he was asked, what to do if you see someone not doing their bhakti properly? Should you tell them something? So Adi Purush said, you hold up a mirror to your face, and you look in the mirror, and you ask yourself the question that, am I seeing this fault because this fault is somewhere in me? So that's what he said. That was his answer. So we should try an experiment. In fact, Burijan did this as a Kartik Vrat. That for this Kartik, I will not mentally criticize or think negative anyone for Kartik. So he confessed that he couldn't even do it for one day. It's really hard, you know, not to think negatively or criticize anyone. But you could try this experiment and see how long. Yeah.
It's a very noble effort. I mean, I understand how a person can try and not criticize someone verbally, but thoughts, you cannot really control your thoughts.
Yeah, I know.
They just come and go, and sometimes you have negative thoughts, and you can try and stop them, but they will still...
Yoga means to control your mind. The purpose of yoga. It is not to... all these asanas. And to control your mind, control your senses. So patience and forgiveness, these qualities are appreciated in all the religions of the world. There is one Christian monk, Thomas Akempis, and who writes, I'll share with you what he said about this forgiveness. Of course, we get it in our Bhagavatam, it's how to control anger. Bhishmadev said forgiveness. You want to control anger? You forgive. So this person, saintly person said, try to bear patiently with the defects and infirmities of others, whatever they may be, because you also may have many a fault which others must endure. You know, like we tolerate people, but they have to tolerate us too. You know, it's not just one way. If you cannot make yourself what you wish to be, how can you bend others to your will? We want them to be perfect, yet we do not correct our own faults. We wish them to be severely corrected, yet we will not correct ourselves. Their great liberty displeases us, yet we would not be denied what we ask. We would have them bound by laws, yet we will allow ourselves to be restrained in doing nothing. Hence it is clear how seldom we think of others as we do of ourselves. As Mahatma Prabhu said in his forgiveness seminar, we want mercy for me and justice for others. That's how we think. I let them suffer what they did to me. Huh? No, you have to forgive. Otherwise, if you don't forgive, then it can cause illness. You keep the anger, the thing inside of you. You can get sick. This Helen Hay, she has a book. Mental causes of diseases. The cause of cancer, mental cause is resentment. That you really are angry with someone and you keep it inside for years and then you get cancer. So we have to be so careful. Forgiveness is in our best interest. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur offers similar comments in chapter 8 of Jiva Dharma. He speaks about the behavior of a Madhyamadikari, middle devotee. They should neglect the ditsatsu or envious. So in the envious persons, he describes five kinds of envious people or envy. The fifth of which is daya shunyata, that means absence of mercy. In other words, lacking mercy, lacking forgiveness, is a manifestation of envy. If we don't forgive, that means we're envious of someone. Mercy, tolerance, forgiveness are extremely important qualities for those interested in developing bhakti. Now, Bhaktivinoda again, in his commentary on Upadeshamrita, kama koro kartavya daya o atya bhashak. Duty of a devotee is to practice forgiveness. So this is an essential quality. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, bhakta sabhava akya dosha kama kore. The nature, the sabhava of a devotee is he excuses any offense by an ignorant rascal. Dine doya kore e sadhu sabhava hoi. characteristic, svabhava of all saintly persons, to be kind towards the poor and fallen. In Bhagavatam, we have the same thing in 9th canto later on. You'll hear about it. Jamadagni telling his son Parashuram, the duty of a Brahmin is to forgive when he went out and killed somebody. Kshamaya rochate lakshmi brahmi shori itha prabha kshamina mashu bhagavangstu shate haririshara. The duty of a Brahmin is to culture the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. Supreme Lord Hari is pleased with those who are forgiving. We want to please Krishna, that's the goal of our life. So we should forgive. Lord Vishnu is Krishna's manifestation as God. Vaishnava means, refers to a devotee of Vishnu. So a Vaishnava he works for, he's a representative of Vishnu. He serves under supervision of senior devotees. And one category of senior devotees are demigods. They are qualified to judge the good and bad deeds of the conditioned souls. So in that sense, we could say that being a devotee means to work in the Lord's courtroom. We're in the court of Krishna. We have two choices, which court we want to work in. The first court is that of the empowered demigod and Mahajan devotee, Yamaraj, Lord of Death. We can work in the courtyard of Yamaraj, in the court. Second court is the court of Nityananda. So if you want to work in Yamaraj's court, that means you help his chief lieutenant, Chitragupta. What is the job of Chitragupta? His job is to note down all the mistakes and sinful acts of conditioned souls. So, what does it mean to be an assistant of Chitragupta? Narada Purana describes. Papinam papagananam yakaroti nararama astitve tu papisyamityatve dvigunam paret. A fault finder is Naradama, lowest of mankind. If the sins are true, the person who is counting them will equally share the sin with the sinner. You'll get the reaction if you're counting someone's sins. But if the accusation is false, they will get double the sin ascribed to the other person. So sometimes people criticize and it's not true. And they'll get double the reaction that the sinner will get. So the phrase papa gananam in this verse is significant. It means one who counts the sins of others. Such a person is a servant of the scribe Chitragupta. We have another example to illustrate this. There was a brahmana and there was a prostitute. And they lived across from each other. And the brahmana was counting all of the customers of the prostitute the whole day. And the prostitute, and he was thinking, wow, what a sinner, she's so sinful. Look at all those people, he was counting. And the prostitute was looking at, across at the Brahman thinking, oh, what a pious soul, what a pure soul. Oh, look at all the fortunate people who are associating with him. And she was counting all the people who were associating. And guess who went to hell? The Brahman. Because his mentality was the sins. It was very sinful. Some people who are so-called preachers say, tell everyone you're going to hell. So I think they're living in hell. These people who are seeing everybody's going to hell except them. And they, you know, they even were criticizing Prabhupada and the devotees in New York when Prabhupada was giving a lecture. And they're shouting. Anyway, so that is their unfortunate life. They are living in hell. So we don't want to work in the court of Yamaraj. We should not become one of his servants. And if you're fault-finding, then that's what you're doing, working in the court of Yamaraj. Now, intelligent devotees, however, aspire to work in the court of Lord Nityananda, who is described in the following song by a poet named Krishnadas. Adosha darashi mora prabhu Nityananda nabhojino hena prabhu charanarvinda. So, Lord Nityananda is a dosha darshi, personality who never sees faults of others. So the poet says, Nitai is Mora Prabhu, my Lord. Why is he my Lord? Because I have so many faults. I have no hope but approaching someone who is a dosha darshi, who doesn't see any faults in others. So, yes. We're lucky because he won't see our faults. Yamaraj will see, Chittagupta will see, Nityananda won't see. He's just distributing. He's so drunk with love of God, he doesn't see who's qualified and not qualified. He just gives freely. Take love of Godhead. So then the poet writes something rather enigmatic. Na bhaji nuhena prabhu charanaravinda. Alas, I never worshipped the lotus feet of Nityananda. So a thoughtful person may ask, how is it? He's writing a song glorifying Nityananda, but says he's never worshipped Nityananda. It doesn't seem to make sense. So we should question what it means to worship the Lord Nityananda. As one worships the sun with fire of a giwik, or worships Mother Ganga with water from her river, similarly, we worship the all-forgiving Lord Nityananda by ourselves being forgiving. Another story about Srila Prabhupada. There was one of his disciples in India. He was stealing money, making life members, and taking all the money for himself. So he was thrown out of the temple. And Prabhupada took him back later and he tried to give him some service. But then again, he was doing some mischief. Again, he was thrown out of the temple. Then finally, he was sitting on the beach in Juhu. And one of our devotees, a very heavy devotee, went. And Prabhupada said, why don't you go and call him? Please call him back to me. I want to help him. And our devotee said, Prabhupada, he's hopeless. You know what he's doing now? He's learning how to pass. He's learning. There's a mystic yogi on the beach. He's taken lessons. And he's learning how to put a coin in one ear and so it goes through and comes out the other. He's hopeless. You can't do anything with him. Prabhupada said, you do not know the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Prabhupada had that mercy. He understood that mercy. He had to accept us. We were really, what he said, just as Lord Ram, he took an army of monkeys to capture Lanka. So he says, I have brought my army of monkeys to India. I was one of those monkeys in his army, came in 1972 with Srila Prabhupada and still there, trying to do something. Some service. So, if we're busy finding faults with others, we're not worshipping Nityananda. We're working for Chittagupta. To work in the court of Nityananda means we must give up fault-finding and the propensity for bearing grudges. So in his purport to Chaitanya Chitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 8, verse 62, Jai Radha Madhava Gonitai, and Giriraj and Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada says, describes our eligibility. It is a qualification of a Vaishnava that he is a dosha darshi. He never sees others' faults. So, in our lives, we all have a choice, a decision to be made. Which court do we want to work for? Do we want to help Chittagupta being a papa gananam by counting all the sins? Or do we want to give up finding other shortcomings and work in the court of Lord Nityananda, Adosha Darshi? It is our choice. So one thing to consider in our decision is that whichever court we decide to work for, we will also be judged in that court. So you want to work for Yamaraj, you'll be judged there. If you want to work for Lord Nityananda, you'll go to his court. And that sounds like a better deal here. We should go to Lord Nityananda's court and be judged there. So, I don't have anything further to say. If anybody has questions or comments, you can add them at this point. Yes?
In the beginning of the class, you mentioned Srila Rupa Goswami says, attitude is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that, is it Upadeshamrita?
Upadeshamrita. In the beginning, like maybe in the preface or introduction or somewhere. It's right in the very beginning. He said, our progress in our advancement in spiritual life is dependent on our attitude, our advancement.
Srila Prabhupada.
No, I think he's quoting Sri Rupa Goswami. As far as Nectar Instruction. It looks like he's quoting Sri Rupa Goswami. He's referring to Rupa Goswami, that he's saying that attitude was the most important thing, as far as I remember. That's what I got when I read it. We want to make advancement in spiritual life. Now we can see the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is showing us the attitude of devotees, different devotees. Prahlad Maharaj, his attitude. When his father, when Lord Nrisimhadeva asked, what benediction do you want? He said, no, I'm happy just serving you. Finally, the Lord was pressing him and said, okay, liberate my father. So forgiveness, amazing forgiveness. His father tried to kill him in so many ways. And he's a five-year-old child, and he says, liberate my father. That's what I want. And Lord Nrisimhadeva said, 14 generations before and after, they're all liberated. As we said the other day in class, Lord, there was a question. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has said that if a pure Uttama Adhikari, pure devotee is born in a family, 100 generations are purified before and after. If a Madhyam devotee is born, 14 generations before and after. And if a Neophyte devotee is born in a family, 3 generations before and after are taken care of by the Lord. So it's very, just be a devotee. That's the best thing you can do for your family. Be a devotee, the best you can. Prabhupada has said 21 when he was, so Prabhupada's a bit more merciful. the grandfather is more merciful. But anyway, he's more merciful. He said 21 generations to some devotees, his disciples. So, yes, we should try to make advancement. We study. The whole Bhagavatam is a study of the attitude of devotees. Dhruva Maharaj, he was a mixed devotee. But he's in Srimad Bhagavatam. He wanted the kingdom. And he got the kingdom. And when he became free from all desires, didn't want anything, then he got the kingdom. Oh no, why did I ask for a kingdom? Now I got it. But I just want you. I was just hearing a lecture of Srila Prabhupada yesterday, where he was talking about how the people of this world, they want Krishna's opulences. They want to enjoy. And they don't want Krishna. They just, as Prabhupada says, Ram Raja without Ram. So the kingdom of heaven without kingdom of Ram, they want without Ram. So people in this world, they want heaven without God. But God's the leader of heaven, He's the one. You can't have heaven without God. So, I can't remember my train of thought. Anyway. Oh yes, the lecture of Srila Prabhupada. He was saying that before the battle of Kurukshetra, Duryodhana and Arjuna came to Krishna's bedside. Krishna was sleeping. They both wanted help from Krishna. Arjuna was at his feet. Duryodhana came first, but he was at the head. So who did he see first? He saw Arjuna at his feet. His eyes opened, and he saw Arjuna first. So he wanted to give Arjuna first choice, and he said, actually, he's younger, so the younger one should get the first choice. That's what he said. Krishna said, anyways, but Prabhupada was saying, well, Duryodhana, he said, I will give you two choices, either I'll give you my army or me. And he said, Duryodhana was calculating, yeah, well, 18 Akshohinis, and he's only one, so it's a lot more, better I take the army. So the opulences, they see the opulences they want, but they don't realize who's the owner of the opulence. So Arjuna said, yeah, huh? Krishna said, and I won't fight. What's the use? He's not even going to fight, and he's, only one, and those are his army, so millions. I'll take the army. And Arjuna took Krishna, and Krishna drove his chariot. So who was the winner? Krishna and Arjuna. Arjuna was the winner. So we should choose Krishna and not the opulences, the externals. Yeah. Any other questions? Comments? Yes.
On the point of forgiveness and tolerance, like persons who are, parents, teachers, managers, their elders, it seems like they have a responsibility.
That's right.
So how does that apply in that case? Like, how do they be tolerant? And
oh, you mean, how should they be tolerant?
Yeah, like, yeah, because it seems like they have a responsibility to criticize and...
Right. So you're talking more about criticism, or... yeah.
Well, it seems they're both connected to some degree.
Yeah. Well, there's two types of criticism. There's fault-finding, and there's another criticism which is beneficial from your well-wisher, from your friend. It's not really criticism, but they're trying to help you. So your spiritual master, your guru, when he finds a fault with you, and Prabhupada said, that's my duty, to find fault with you, to find your mistake, so then we can progress. Yes, there are certain people who do have that right. The demigods, as Prabhupada was mentioning in the purport, they have the right to criticize. They have the right because they have to judge. They will judge. It was not in the purport, but in Bhaktivinoda Thakur said they have the right to judge. You know, the parents have the right, the guru. Because we are hoping that they are doing it in good faith. They want to help you. And they have to tolerate a lot. The guru has to tolerate a lot. The parents have to tolerate so much. And the teachers too. If you want to be a teacher, just imagine what they go through. So they do tolerate. And if they're a pure or honest teacher, then they will only criticize if it is for your benefit. So then we have to forgive our parents and our teachers and our spiritual master when they criticize us. And that's Krishna. What was he saying? I believe it was at the end of the chapter 64 in Bhagavatam, the story of King Nriga, who became a lizard. He was warning his family members, the Yadu dynasty, don't take anything from a Brahmin. You'll become a worm and stool for hundreds of years, thousands of years. And he said also, even if a Brahmin chastises you, you should smile and you should accept it. So certain people have to be forgiven, Brahmanas, and we do have, and the teachers, they have to forgive their students sometimes a lot, and parents have to forgive their children. They do lots of nonsense. You have to be patient and tolerant, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that they don't try to discipline them and correct them. So some people do have that service. They do have that right to criticize and judge. There's a verse in Bhagavatam, Guru Nasasya, Janani Nasasya, Pitam Nasasya, Daivam Nasasya, that you should not be a guru or a mother or a father unless you can take your dependence back to Godhead. So in order to liberate your dependence, you may have to criticize them and teach them, no, don't go that way, that's the wrong way to go. Don't steal, don't, you know, have illicit sex. Like Prabhupada told us, he said, don't do these four things. So he had to criticize us, and poor Shuddha Kirti, what was he doing? Oh, he threw an orange peel in the kitchen where he was cooking. It was from Prabhupada's remnants, and he threw it in the same kitchen where he was cooking. And Prabhupada said, "How can you do this? This is mochi. It is." And of course, he wasn't. Shuddha Kirti was thinking, oh, this is pure, it's your remnants, you know, but Prabhupada didn't see that way. And so he said, you're a malacha. You'll be intelligent, you won't be intelligent until after you're 80. So Shuddha Kirti was thinking, oh my God, what did I do now? I have to make him pee, I have to pacify Prabhupada. What will I say? So what he said to Prabhupada was, oh, Prabhupada, thank you. I never thought I would be intelligent in this life. And you're saying I'll be intelligent after 80. Oh, thank you for that blessing. At least I'll be intelligent after I'm 80. And Prabhupada started laughing and laughing. He said, yeah, when we were young, we used to say that to our friends. You won't be intelligent till you're 80. So I was trying it on you.
Rajabhasis, you know?
Yeah, they do that, huh?
Well, Nanda Maharaj, when all the cowherd men, they're saying, oh, Krishna, you can't chastise him, he must be God, look what he's doing, lifting Govardhan.
Yeah.
He said, you cowherd men, until your wisdom teeth come, until you're 80 years old, you're all foolish.
Oh, that's where you get it from.
Yeah, this is Brajvasi's mood.
Until you get your wisdom teeth.
Gopas don't have, wisdom teeth come when you're young, but it's like, till you're 80, Gopas, they don't have intelligence. Something like that.
till they're 80. Okay, yeah, they're supposed to be less intelligent. Srinishudadijabandhu. Vaishya Shudras. And also, yeah, Gita is three. Vaishya Shudra, three. Don't have intelligence. And Papa Yoni. Sinful people, Stri Shudra. And, yeah. Vaishya Shudra. Is it Mom? Anyway, I can't remember. Mami Parti of Pashidya, Yepi Su Papa Yonayastriya, Vaishya Stata Shudras. Te Pianti Parangatim. That if, you know, the sinful, the women, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras, they can also approach me if they surrender. They can approach the Supreme Destination. So, yeah, if you want to make a shortcut, then become a devotee. And you go beyond your conditioning of Stri, Vaishya, and Shudra, women, Vaishya, Shudra. If you become a devotee, then you go beyond. You can transcend your conditioning. Good. That's where Prabhupada got it from. Very intelligent, yeah.
In relation to Sadhguru's question.
Who?
Relation to
Oh, yeah,
Shadhapur's
okay,
question,
okay. Yeah, that's a very good question.
Because I heard it said that if you're a good student or a disciple, then you become a good leader. And so
follower, yeah, Prabhupada. If you're a good follower, you will become a good leader.
Yeah, so a good follower, he would graciously accept criticism, wouldn't he? I mean, mm-hmm. He would graciously accept correction.
Yes.
Because he knows that he needs his mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it might seem sometimes a bit unfair or heavy or whatever, he can just accept his purification.
Right. He accepts it.
Yeah. It takes the false ego away.
That's a very good point. I like that. That, yes, if a follower, a true follower, disciple, will be happy to get the mercy of it, even if it's in the form of chastisement. And with Srila Prabhupada, it was like that, because any attention is good, you know, because there are thousands of us. If he shows us some attention, chastises us well. Of course, I didn't think that way when he was here. We got chastised a couple of times. Because we were the pujaris in Calcutta Temple. So, you don't want to be there. One time he said the ghee lamps, because we didn't have much electricity in the 70s when we were there. So we had these big ghee lamps. And Prabhupada said, "Why are the ghee lamps so dirty? Who has done this?" I thought he should have asked, "Who has not done this?" But anyway, so he called us up and just want to disappear in a hole in the floor, but you just have to stand there and take it. And, and my survival instinct is to run or hide, but I couldn't do it, you know. Or you can't fight. That's finished that. You can't fight with your guru. I didn't have that instinct anyway. There's three survival instincts. You can fight, flight, and freeze. So mine was, I think, was to freeze. I just kind of didn't know what to do, but we kind of froze. Another thing with Shudakirti, one time he was chastising him, you know, for 5 minutes, and Shudakirti just didn't say a word, his Prabhupada's servant. And Prabhupada said, "You're no fun, you don't fight back." So Tamal would fight with him, and Shudakirti would be sitting there looking at, "What does Tamal say?" He's, you know, when Prabhupada told him to go to China, it was like Tamal was trying to convince him why he shouldn't go back to India, why he should preach in the West, stay with Radha Damodar. And he was giving all these arguments, and Prabhupada wasn't having it. And finally, at the end, Tamal was just frustrated. He said, "Well, if you want me to go to India, I might as well go to China." And then the next day, Prabhupada's servant was calling Tamal, and Tamal said, "No, I'm not going." He said, "Prabhupada's calling you." And then, "No, I'm not going to China." He knew. Prabhupada said, "I want you to go to China." He was giving all his arguments, but finally he surrendered and he went to China, and because of that, we have all these Chinese devotees today. He opened up China. He went in his plain clothes, he wrote novels, a novel about a Chinese person who became a devotee, who found Krishna consciousness. And right now, I have heard that the Chinese government is printing our books and putting them in their libraries. They themselves are printing. Yeah, that's what I heard. They're putting Prabhupada's books in their libraries. But if you're, I mean, somehow, but they don't make the connection between the books and the devotees. Like, the devotees are still persecuted. And they can't have, you know, Harinam and stuff, and they can't have temples, but the books, they appreciate somehow. So that's quite an amazing thing that's happening. That they want the books. Anyway, yeah, it's guru chastisement is heavy. But you know, you get, that means he's paying attention. You know, we have 5,000 of us, Prabhupada disciples, and if Prabhupada pays attention to you, you know, you're so happy, you know. But of course, in those days, I didn't appreciate it so much. Now I do, that he paid attention to me. He praised us also. Mostly he praised us. I would say 75% of the time he would praise us, and 25% he would chastise. He loved the deity worship because we had such an opulence of flowers. I had one man donating 50 garlands every day, 144 lotuses every day, 144 roses every day. It was very opulent. You go in there, you smell everything. It was Prabhupada liked that. We changed the flowers 5 times a day. So it was just overflowing with flowers. So Prabhupada really liked that. He really liked that worship. And so he did praise us a lot. But you know, I can't let it get to your head, so then he would chastise us also.
And this is, Guru is like a potter. When she's making her pot, with one hand is so soft, so smooth, and the other one slapping into place.
Exactly. Prabhupada would say, hard like a thunderbolt and soft like a rose. Mm-hmm. No, he would say that. So, yeah. Sometimes he would do that. Yeah, another one I just remembered with Shuddhakirti, he has so many stories. One time we were in Vrindavan. I came to Vrindavan in 1972 for Nectar of Devotion classes. And Shuddhakirti was up there with the chamara, but there was all these flies landing on Prabhupada. And he was like, you know, doing the puja like Arti, you know. And the flies were there, you know. And Prabhupada said, get someone up here who's intelligent. And he sent Shuddhakirti back. Then he got this one really lusty, heavy brahmachari. And he was just like, like getting all the flies off. Prabhupada said, yes. He was even touching him. You know, it's like a hurricane, you know, hurricane force. And Prabhupada liked that. He was doing the job, you know. You know, not, you know, again, the ritual. He was doing, one was doing the ritual, one got the essence, you know, get the flies off. And the other one was like, you know, like how we do Arti. I see sometimes in Vrindavan the pujaris do. You go and get the flies off. They just walk up to the deities and get them off in Vrindavan. So yeah, we have to see the purpose of what we're doing. What is the goal, you know? What is the purpose of the chamras? To get the flies off. And the purpose of this Bhagavatam, what we learned, the attitude of Ambarish is so amazing. Amazing attitude. And 1 year he's waiting with food. I don't know if he has the food on his head, but he's waiting for 1 year to eat. He didn't eat. He fasted for 1 year until Durvasa came back. It took Durvasa 1 year to go everywhere. And Ambarish was peacefully just drinking water the whole year. And I believe his wife also. The both of them were like doing this Ekadashi Vrat for 1 year, and then another year they just drank water and waited for him because he was the guest. I mean, he really knew how to do things on Barish. Durvasa didn't have a clue. What does it mean to how to treat a guest? How amazing they were. And so, yeah. This we have to learn from these devotees in Srimad Bhagavatam. And we scrutinize the first 9 cantos, then we can understand what attitude we need to enter into the 10th canto. As Prabhupada said in the preface of Srimad Bhagavatam, if you scrutinizingly study the first 9 cantos, verse by word, even the synonyms, I was going to say. But you'll become a God-realized soul at the end of your first 9 cantos, and then you can relish 10th canto. So that is nice. So we should do that. Don't jump. Of course, Prabhupada did give us Krishna book in the beginning, even before. He only had, when I joined, there was only the first canto which he brought on the boat. Those books that he brought over on the boat, printed in India. And then we had, we didn't have second canto. And Krishna book came out. Krishna book. In the second month I was a devotee, I remember, and I put it under my pillow. Went to sleep with it. So, yeah, Krishna book, 10th canto came. But, he gave us that. It's in a very nicely digestible form. Krishna book, you have all the philosophy and you have a very nice way to see Krishna Leela through the eyes of Srila Prabhupada. And he gave us right in the beginning that. And we did appreciate that. Okay, any other questions? Yes.
Sorry, back to fault finding. you mentioned that there's two different kinds, and that maybe probably answered it already about attitude, but mm-hmm. we also have to be able to discriminate because
exactly.
we're supposed to reject and
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can't totally try to not see other people's faults either.
Yes.
How do we deal with that?
The way you deal with that is if you are in a position of authority over that person, or if you're a friend, then you can... But generally, the Brahmins, they don't give their advice unless asked for. And the one thing you should learn about giving advice is that no one's going to follow it unless they ask you for it. So it's probably a useless task. It's something that will make you very frustrated because... they're not going to listen to you unless they ask you for advice. So unless you are in that position of authority, then it's useless. I mean, it's not good for you to see the faults. Of course, if somebody's killing someone on the street, you should see that fault and, you know, try to do the needful. I don't know what you call here, but in America it's 911, 112 or something, I don't know.
999.
999? Okay, so you can't tolerate injustice being done. But at the same time, you have to see if the authorities are addressing that or not. And most of the issues within ISKCON are being addressed by the GBC. As far as I can see, if they're not, then they will be doing. That's what I see. So I'm not getting into the women's issue or this issue. I just try to be Krishna conscious and not see faults and just appreciate the good, see the good, beg for blessings. And there is good in everything. And one thing I'm convinced of is that even though there may be things wrong with ISKCON, things wrong with leaders, Prabhupada has them in a position for a certain reason, and they're doing something good at this moment to help ISKCON. And as soon as they don't, Prabhupada will take them out. As soon as they overstep their line, the boundaries, Prabhupada will take them out, either that or he'll rectify them. If they're actually sincere devotees, they will be rectified. If it cannot be rectified, then Prabhupada will take them out. But devotees can be rectified. They can be helped. If they are sincere, if they're introspective, then Prabhupada, if they're very dedicated to Srila Prabhupada, then Prabhupada will speak to them. And, you know, they'll listen. They'll be trying to find out what is Prabhupada's desire. And they will try to fulfill that. So sometimes you get clouded over. You don't see. But if you're really sincere, then you will. The time will come. If you're open, if you're receptive to advancement. I mean, advancement requires that, you know, there is room for improvement. So if you're open to room for improvement, then certainly you can be rectified. And I do have faith. I have faith that Prabhupada is in control, and whatever problems are there, they will be solved, they will be rectified by Prabhupada. Any other questions? Yes.
Just one. Manorani. At the start of your lecture, you were talking about the four reasons why devotees leave.
Yeah, that was Bhakti Chitta Maharaj, yeah.
We hear a lot about sort of why devotees leave and how devotees come to Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
But one thing that certainly I think is applicable to all of us here is how do we remain
Exactly. One of my seminars, I do that. First I ask, why did you come? Yeah. What brought you here? Then I say, the next question I ask is, why do you stay? Yeah, that's the question I ask in the seminar. And a seminar on faith, a shout out to the first class on faith, and I ask them that question, so why do you stay? And most of the answers are association, because I get this association of devotees. Of course, association can go two ways, you know. You can be cursed by the association, or you can be... you can be praised. But eventually we have to become neutral to that. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Nindatna Sangstuti, that you have to become callous to praise and blame. But, I mean, you should take the criticism to heart, and the praise, you should be careful. You have to be more careful about the praise. Because if you accept it, if you accept praise, that's fall down. Then you're falling down because you don't deserve it. The praise is you're supposed to give to your guru. You pass it on. The blame you keep. the praise you give. But most people in the material world, it's the opposite. Something goes wrong, they blame God. And something goes good, they take the credit.
Yeah.
So this is material thinking. So we're trying to become spiritual. So we have to, yes, that person is right. Like Srinivas Thakur, when the atheist, they put all these things on his porch at night to worship Chandi, I think perhaps meat and all these bad things, liquor. And they said, just see, he's not a Vaishnava. And what did Srivas do? He called all the leaders of the village and he said, just see, I'm not a Vaishnava. But they knew that this was somebody's bad deed. And they said, who has done this? Oh, and they understood because they knew the character of Srivas. So I don't know if we're that advanced to say, oh, just look at me, you know, they're all right, you know, all these critics, they're correct. just see. But anyway, they probably are correct. but we feel that way, you know, yes, there is room for improvement. Any other... okay, it's almost 9. Is that prasadam time? Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Jai.